Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Welcome to Open Billion Radio, everybody that's listening live, and if you're listening to the podcast, that's great too. We thank you. It's December 15th, 2016. Just where has the year gone? I'm your host, Richard Cameron, and with me is co-host Dina Leichnitz, and we're talking about mainly veterans issues this evening. We maybe, you know, discuss a few other related items as well. Open Rebellion is an adjunct to the Madison's CPC website. Madison's is our, you know, is our main media platform, and you can check that out. You can go look at all the interesting stories that we have up on the site, both today and the archived ones, which we have quite a few, and it covers all variety of topic matter, including politics, but you know, not exclusively politics, and that is at www.madisonscpc.com. Madisonscpc.com. Good evening, Dina.
Hey, Richard. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you are here as well. And I'm hearing that you're doing a knockout impression of a gypsy these days.
Yes, I am. So I got kicked out of my home after 20 years because, you know, life is just like that. And mm-hmm. So I am just trying to find a place to land. I think I found a hotel for at least a few days that I can, you know, sort of recover and then go on from there. But, yeah, me and my son are just going to be just wandering around, little nomads for a time.
Yep.
Until we find some place to land. But,
a lot of people
mean,
doing that.
Yeah. And
there
it,
are.
And
I think
sure
you wrote an article about, you know, about the homelessness situation, which affects veterans as well, of course, quite significantly. Dina's call has dropped for just a moment. I'm sure she will be back. But Dina did write an article about homelessness, and it continues to be a problem because, you know, despite all of the cheery, you know, apple polishing stories about how the economy has recovered, you know, the Obama recovery, which is a very dubious thing. it actually hasn't recovered. It is not recovered. The economy is not recovered.
No.
People have not bounced back. The only thing that has recovered is the people that were bailed out, you know, in 2009, people that were bailed out, they have bounced back. They have, you know, the stock market has gone up considerably because, you know, when you have either a zero interest rate or you have at this point, 0.75 interest rate, that's not a big motivating factor for investors to take their money out of stocks and put it, you know, back into actual productive investments that boost the economy.
Yeah.
The stock market is just a it's a circular deal, which I, you know, I want to use the euphemism for that, but it's, but the money's not going back into Main Street. It's not,
right.
By and large,
right.
Not. You know, and people are, the unemployment situation, the reality of it is that the number of people that have dropped out of the labor force has actually gone up this past 8 years.
Yeah. And people are not even looking for jobs at this point because it's like, what's the point? And so you see them not looking for jobs. And so they're not counted in the unemployment statistics at that rate.
No, they're
right?
not. No.
And then you see the welfare go up as well. So more people on welfare than have been in a while. And, like, just looking around in my own neighborhood, usually the Koreans are the most – they have the most businesses. They're pretty good economically.
They're very industrious people.
Yes. But I have seen more of them, like, trying to get the free food that is given out than ever before, you know?
Well, that's kind of that is kind of a canary in the coal mine, then. If you see that happening, then you know that most of this stuff about, you know, they tell people this stuff, the news media, the corporate news media, the controlled news media tells people this stuff. Because they, you know, the retailers, you know, the corporations don't want to, you know, take a hit.
Yeah.
During, you know, the Christmas holiday buying season, you know, and discourage people from buying more, you know, more stuff from made in China.
Yeah.
The whole syndrome of exporting American jobs and stuff. So they want them to keep buying all that. Even though at any time this whole house of cards could come crashing down.
Exactly.
And with regards to the veterans situation that we are looking at here, it affects them considerably because, you know, they're not employees of the military for life and they come back.
Right.
To this country, and they're and many of them are economically displaced.
Yeah.
So, what I want to do right now is, before we get too far along, is give out the guest call-in number for people who want to call in. If you're a veteran, if you are a member of a family that is a veteran, that has a veteran in it, we'd like to talk to you tonight. We'd like to just discuss any kind of topic related to veterans that is important to you. The guest call-in number is area code 773-897-6299. Once again, 773, write it down, 773-897-6299. And feel free to give us a ring. We're not screening calls tonight. You can get right in and we'll bring you on the air. We have veterans that are, you know, in need of jobs, and you know this country needs to stimulate job growth, real job growth.
Yeah.
And so of course we're hoping that we, you know, that there's not a disaster just around the corner. Or anything that would cause anything to become even worse than it is now. So, I'm cautiously half skeptical, half optimistic, but that's another program.
Yeah.
The other thing that I'd like to give out to people, and we'll probably do it again before the program is over, is there is a Veterans Crisis Line that you can, you know, if you have post-traumatic stress disorder or depression or any other, you know, just if it's just other lifestyle issues related to trying to get acclimated again to the civilian, you know, society, you can call this number. It's 1-800, toll-free, 1-800-273-8255. Press 1, and you can either chat online or send a text message to 838-255. But the call-in number again for that service, Veterans Crisis Line, is 1-800-273-8255. So take advantage of that if that's, you know, that would be a resource for people where they can, you know, get assistance. And the other thing that that I just want to touch on briefly before we move forward, a little bit about this program itself. This is probably, aside from any unforeseen situations that might crop up, this is the last broadcast of the year. And, you know, in 2017, we're going to be retooling. We might, change the name of the program. We might, we're probably going to be partnering with another terrific media enterprise by the name of Lanterns Buzz. And Adina, maybe you can tell the listeners a little bit about that prospective partnership that Madison is moving into.
Okay, so we have, like I said, recently partnered with a organization called Lanterns, and they are very much a syndication for conservatives. So they have a lot of conservative sites attached to their website. So you can read from different people and different conservatives, different voices. You also have a lot of radio shows that they're doing, and that is one of their strong suits. And so we are going to be partnering with them and hopefully, you know, getting better, having them teach us and saying, you know, this is something you guys need to look at and maybe do it this do it this way. And hopefully we'll be even better when we come back. And we're also going to be working on our columns so we can grow that audience. And so when people say, oh, Richard Cameron has a show, I'm totally listening because I know who Richard Cameron is. Or that Dina
right.
L person. I can't say her last name, but it starts with L. Her.
Exactly.
I want to listen to her.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, so we're going to, you know, just kind of we did do a reset, and it will be better. And we do have a lot to learn. Absolutely, have a lot to learn. Even when people compliment me about the columns I write, I as a writer, I tell them, I have not arrived yet. I don't believe I've arrived yet, and I'm always looking every day for ways that I can communicate better and improve what I do and. Buff it up and polish it and
exactly.
Spank it on the backside and put it out the door. So anyway, but and with that in mind, we do have some columns that are up. I was mentioning to the listeners that you have a column up on the homelessness situation, and so it's a sort of a perspective column, and it's good. It's worth taking a look at. That's on the site, www.madisonscpc.com. And I have a handful of articles that, in one way or another, relate to the veterans issues. You can check me out under the archive there, Richard Cameron. All of my posts are over there. We're on Facebook as well, so look us up at Madison CPC on Facebook, and also this Open Rebellion Radio. We have a Facebook page there as well. But under my archive, Richard Cameron, there's one recently that I did, sort of the first of a series about veterans, the Veterans Hospital Administration, the fact that even after all of the, all of the smoke cleared from the last time the scandals were exposed about veterans having to wait months and months and months and the scheduling scandal and all that, all that has been done so far.
Yeah.
This is not to say that this is every single veterans hospital out there. We learned from our friend Stan Adams at Ted Cruz, Commander-in-Chief 2016, his Facebook page. We learned from him last week that, that there are some that have got their act together, reasonably well.
Yeah.
But there's a lot. There's too many problem spots out there, and there's too many areas where the getting to that hospital is inconvenient. Getting scheduled is inconvenient. Getting scheduled is nearly impossible. and they're not receiving the care that they need. So there's a lot more in the way of reform that needs to be, you know, instituted in the system. And some of it may wind up being that some medical care gets privatized, and that's something seriously needs to be looked into as well.
Yeah.
Another article that I have going is one, and I'm going to tell the listeners a little bit about that. Now, just kind of, it's an interesting story. It's a story that's really kind of, you know, you hear it and you go, wow, this is crazy, the kind of things that go on.
Yeah.
But there was a gentleman, well, I'll read the story to you and then we can talk a little bit about it. But the Washington, D.C. Police Department, which is headed by a chief of police that's notoriously hostile to gun owners in the district, we're talking about the nation's capital there, has had its wings clipped by the D.C. Court of Appeals. The ruling issued earlier this month dealt with the case of U.S. Army Reservist Sergeant Matthew Corrigan. Corrigan, veteran of Iraq, he was training combat teams in Fallujah from 2005 to 2006. One night called what he mistakenly thought was a counseling hotline for returning vets with PTSD, but he accidentally dialed a national suicide hotline. And right out of the starting gate, the suicide counselor asked him, "Hey, are you a gun owner?" And Corrigan, probably not comprehending the implication of the question, responded in the affirmative. "Yeah, I've got guns here, but they're safe. They're locked up. I'm not playing with them right now." But immediately the volunteer at the phone bank went into the crisis mode, without really ascertaining the situation or getting clarification on it, and called. And he said to Corrigan, he said, "Put the guns down." And Corrigan attempted to persuade the volunteer that his firearms were safely stored and he wasn't presently handling them. And as far as the volunteer was concerned, any counseling that was going to take place was over now, and the time to get a hold of local authorities was the main priority. But Sergeant Corrigan, deciding that the call was not a fit for the counseling he had been seeking when he called, concluded the conversation with the individual on the other end and on the other line and went to sleep for the night, or so he thought. The next thing is the suicide counselor directly places a call to emergency dispatch at the D.C. Police Department and gave them Corrigan's address. The call was classified attempted suicide, and the responding unit rolled out at 11:13 p.m. They proceeded not to contact Corrigan directly, but to spend over 4 hours setting up a barricade on the block, shutting off the gas at Corrigan's apartment, evacuating neighbors, and surrounding the home with armed officers. Then around 4 a.m., this is approximately 5 hours later, D.C. police pounded on Corrigan's door, demanding that he come out. Corrigan did so, but because he was suspicious about the circumstance, in general, locked the door behind him. I mean, he had his dog in the house, and, he sort of had a funny feeling that something was going to happen here that was just going to be kind of a mess. He tried to explain the miscommunication that may have led to their visit, but they weren't interested. Having been told by the suicide counselor that Corrigan had firearms, that was all they were interested in, and demanded that he allow them in to invade his home, minus a search warrant. And he asked him, "Do you have a warrant?" And so this quote from the D.C. Circuit's opinion sets the tone for the unconstitutional escapades that followed. The officer was asked for his key, who asked for his key, told Corrigan, "I don't have time to play this constitutional bull."
Oh, my goodness.
"We're going to break down your door. You're going to have to pay for a new door." Corrigan responded, "Well, it looks like I'm paying for a new door then. I'm not giving you consent to go into my place." So the police did proceed to break into Corrigan's home without warrant, and they conducted a search. They found no one inside but Corrigan's rescue dog, Matrix, and no dangerous or illegal items in plain view, and some nothing evidencing any threat to the community or himself. Later that morning, Corrigan checked himself into a veterans hospital for PTSD symptoms brought about by what had just occurred.
Yeah.
But the PC Police Department, the DC Police Department, excuse me, little verbal dyslexia there, the DC Police Department, they weren't done yet. They weren't finished. Corrigan would be taught a lesson about refusing an unlawful warrant, and they came back once again 5 hours later, and on this visit, while Corrigan was not present, proceeded in turning Corrigan's residence upside down, dumping out the contents of every drawer, box, bag, and sweeping items off of shelves. I mean, this is Animal House stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
In short, trashing the place. So my question is, and I write in the article, was this because they believed that Corrigan was the subject of an investigation? Or was it because it presented an opportunity to exact further retribution against Corrigan for his lack of cooperation earlier? Now, I'll let the listener come to their own conclusion, but to my lights, this was, you know, an opportunistic deal. It's like, yeah, this guy isn't going to tell us that we need any stinking warrants. No.
Yeah, it just seems totally retributive to me. Doesn't seem...
Yeah. See? And here's the other thing. And you know, the court, the D.C. Court of Appeals totally views this situation as that in the judge in the ruling was Judge got her name here, Judge Judith Rogers, and it was a three justice panel that ruled 2-1 majority. They reversed the lower court ruling, and they deemed the first break-in highly suspect legally, you know, from a legal standpoint.
The second
break-in they found was patently an abuse of authority under color of law.
Oh, good.
So this gentleman is now, as you can well imagine, I mean, in his circumstance, I'd be suing somebody's pants off, and particularly the city. And that's what he's going to be able to do. And to me, you know, these agencies, when they do these kind of things, like there's an expression for this, but I don't recall it right away. It has something to do with being swatted. But when they do these unwarranted searches and these, you know, busting into people's homes without a warrant, that's usually a reflection of the policies and the policies of the city itself. They're endorsing. You can pretty much bank on the fact they're endorsing that behavior.
Yeah. Yep.
So they're going to get, you know, they're going to get a reminder that the Fourth Amendment is not BS.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so strange to hear people talk so just abhorrently about the Constitution when it's there to protect us from, you know, events like this and from tyranny and, you know, from unjust searches and seizures. And, you know, this is the whole reason that when the Constitution was founded in, who was it? Oh, jeez. I think it was Patrick Henry, yeah. He was like, well, where are the rights? Where are our rights in this? There's like three, you know? And they were like, no, it's going to be fine. We need a Bill of Rights. We need something, you know? And so
need to spell it out. No uncertain terms.
Exactly. And so, you know, there was a large battle just to get those rights defined and written down, you know, and thank God for James Madison, who actually took the time to write down these rights that we have. So
that's our mascot. That's our guy.
That's our guy.
That's our namesake. You know, so absolutely. I mean, and you know, the thing of it is that with the Fourth Amendment, which people just don't know well enough, and it's not in the amendment. If you go and read the Constitution, folks, please bone up on it. Refresh, you know, your memory of everything in the Bill of Rights. It's all important, but that is something that is overlooked quite a bit by the general population, and shouldn't be, because you know, for a fact, when you go, and you know, people are traveling a lot this time of year, and the lines are backing up, you know, at the airports, the security check through and all of that, people do not understand, or they don't comprehend that whole security procedure at the airport is a complete violation of the Fourth Amendment. Okay, because before you can lawfully be subject to a search, and your person, you carry your person with you wherever you go. Your person doesn't, you know, stay back at the house, and then you're exposed to violations of your constitutional rights when you leave the house. No, that's not the case. That it requires probable cause that a crime has either been committed or is likely to be committed.
Yeah.
If there's no probable cause, the government cannot legally search you.
Nope.
In any way. Now, here's the difference. Here's a distinction. Okay, because that's a government agency at the airport that's conducting these searches. If you go to a football game, go to a, you know, Super Bowl, or you go to a playoff game, or whatever, you know, whatever kind of a venue, entertainment venue, they can do, you know, a search to a certain extent. Like when you go through Disneyland, I take a little peek in the, you know, they just, it's sort of perfunctory, but they can do it. And the reason that they can do it is because that's private property. But in any other regard where you're coming in contact with a government agency, can't be done. But they do it. They do it, and they're getting away with it so far. But it, you know, but it's wrong, and it's illegal.
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad I took those classes at UCLA that taught you, like, exactly what is in the Constitution, what this actually means, you know, what is legal, what is not, you know. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't do that, you know, you don't have to go to college, but you need to sit down and you need to read it yourself and go through these things so you will know what the government is able to and what they're not able to do, because that is how you lose your rights. Once you don't know, you think everything's okay.
Exactly. I mean, I've heard people say, nobody likes it, but I'm going to submit to it because the government is trying to keep me safe.
Yeah.
To which, some person with the ability to come up with a better snappy rejoinder to that than I have says, well, if you want to be perfectly safe, the best place for you is a federal penitentiary. That's total security.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to be, if you don't want a police state, and you don't want a, you know, you know, the country to be, you know, operating along the same lines as a prison, then no, we've got to go back to the Constitution, and we got to realize that that there's no probable cause for about 99 or better percent of the people that are going through those long lines at the airport, and that's really just one example of, you know, it's one example of this, but it's a pretty significant one that affects so many people.
And
getting back to veterans' situation, there's another article that I have up there, one quite notable, military veteran. She is the Congresswoman of 2nd District of Hawaii. Her name is Tulsi Gabbard, Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. She's an interesting person. You know, when I talk about in the article some of the notable things that she's been doing lately, one of which was that, you know, during the Democratic National Convention, when they were, you know, when they were pushing Hillary Clinton through the funnel, she was the one of the vice chairs on the Democratic National Committee, and she resigned in protest because of the way that they were just basically shoehorning Hillary Clinton, you know, in there, and Bernie Sanders is getting, you know, the short end of the stick. And the other reason that she, you know, that she disassociated herself from anything having to do with, you know, Hillary Clinton's nomination or, you know, general election campaign is that she believes that Hillary Clinton is at least significantly responsible for the policies that have led up to, you know, what's going on in another article I've written about Aleppo and our policies there and all the different players. I haven't finished that yet, but I'm on my way. But you can see that, you know, that Hillary Clinton basically, she pushed the Obama administration and the Defense Department into regime changing Gaddafi. And the consequence of that was that not only did Libya itself become a terrorist Disneyland, but also that caused, you know, a ripple effect in that a lot of those weapons that were formerly in control of Gaddafi's regime then were transported to Syria and put in the hands of ISIS, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Al-Nusra Front, and just a lot of it's all the same thing. It was known as Al-Qaeda at one point, and Al-Qaeda still exists, but for the most part, those individual terrorist groups have just sort of, they've melted into the ISIS mold, and that's what got, you know, ISIS, you know, off the ground in Iraq and in Syria, and that's what we're dealing with now. With the atrocities that have been committed. And her argument is, and she's just introduced a bill into the House of Representatives called the Stop Arming Terrorists Bill.
Okay, I haven't heard of that bill. Tell me more about it.
Okay, and the Stop Arming Terrorists Bill, the point behind the bill is that we have been funding them. We have been supplying them with weapons. We've been supplying them with training, and that the best way, you know. And she looks at it from the standpoint of a returning vet who, you know, did I believe two deployments in Iraq. She looks at it from the standpoint that when you arm these terrorists, when you basically create these Franken-terror monsters, then at some point it metastasizes and it gets so out of control that we eventually have to, you know, we being the kind of like the leaders, the point of the spear of NATO and the world's policemen, then we've got to go in and put those fires out.
Yeah.
And in so doing, we needlessly waste a lot of blood and treasure. And then the vicious cycle continues of the men and women coming back that have been injured, if they come back at all, other than in body bags. If they come back, they've been injured by roadside bombs, improvised explosive devices, shrapnel, enemy fire, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Needlessly. And I don't say that, to say that people that, that are troops that go there and serve, that they're dying in vain or anything like that. That would be an insult. But I'm simply saying that they're not responsible for the policies of the government, but they are oftentimes the victims of the policies that the government is pursuing as far as foreign policy goes.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this foreign policy is just, it's just rotten. It is so corrupt. And
it is,
and this is the interesting part, Tulsi Gabbard did visit Donald Trump at Trump Tower to talk about some of these issues and to talk about this bill that she was going to be coming out with. And, I'm hoping that he took what he heard seriously, but at least he gave her the opportunity to capture his ear for a short period of time.
Yeah. Yep. And it's great that she was able to reach up directly. Most
mm-hmm.
people don't have that opportunity, but you
no.
still can make your voice heard and, just by writing to your congressman or, writing op-eds to your paper, just doing whatever you can to make your voice heard. I was at church the other day, and me and my friend were talking about, having a very poor life and how we need to work together, blah, blah, blah. And my other friend was like, but I'm not an activist. I'm like, but that's okay, because there's a role for you too. So
mm-hmm.
you find your role, you find what you're comfortable doing, and then you do it, but don't let people say, well, your voice doesn't count, it doesn't make a difference. Yeah, it does, So just don't let people dissuade you from doing what is the right thing to do.
That's absolutely right. And, I don't have the phone number of the Capitol switchboard right in front of me, but you can put in the search engine, whether it's Google, Yahoo, whatever, you can put in the search engine, U.S. Capitol switchboard, and you get that number, and all you need to do is just simply, it's an 800 number, you dial that number, the person on the other end will say, who is your congressperson? You just got to find out who your congressperson is if you don't know. And then you ask for their office, and then you just talk to somebody on the phone, and you say, I understand that there is a bill that's headed towards the, towards a couple of the committees dealing with, the Stop Arming Terrorists Act, and I am in favor of that, and would you please pass my opinion on to my congressperson, let them know. I want them to support it. I want them to be a co-sponsor of the bill. And, the people that they listen to, the people they hear from, is silence. Silence is considered to be consent to whatever the
yeah.
status quo is, unless you speak
yeah.
up.
Exactly.
And voting is not enough. Voting won't get the job done. And
no.
it's nice that people vote, good, fine. But that's not the entire process involved. That's just the beginning of the process.
Process, yeah.
Then these people are, I don't care who you're talking, if it's your congressman, if it's your senator, if it's, if it's the president-elect, soon to become the president, they are
yeah.
all employees of We the People.
That's right.
There are employees, and it's our responsibility to manage them. Call,
because
tweet,
if we don't, nobody
email.
Will. So.
No, it's right. It's all up to us. We are the change that we've been, looking for.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And speaking of the end of the day, I think we're going to pretty much wrap it up here. thank everybody that's listening this evening. Thank you for joining me, Dina, and we'll put this out as a podcast for people who didn't get a chance to hear it, but it was a great conversation, even though most of it was me doing a monologue. but I get a lot of experience talking to myself anyway, so just a continuation of that. But now we'll close out the year with the recording of the prayer that this is the one that Mary did for us, I think.
Yeah,
if I'm not
she was our
mistaken.
Too.
Yeah, Mary Birkenhoff.
Yeah.
So we'll do that, and we'll say goodnight to everybody, and have a merry. And I don't mind saying this; I have no reluctance whatsoever. Have a merry, merry, merry Christmas.
And
you know,
a happy New Year.
Don't be obnoxious. Yeah, and a happy New Year. And don't be obnoxious with people on that thing. But you know what? You know, Merry Christmas. No one ever landed in the hospital for having had Merry Christmas said.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It won't kill you. You won't. You'll live through it somehow. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Kwanzaa.
And let's see, what else? Yes, I was just going to say Kwanzaa, the Kwanzaa deal. You know? It's all dandy.
It's all good.
I don't think there's an atheist prayer. But if they have one, they can. I don't know. They wouldn't be talking to anybody, or so they think. There was, the funniest thing I saw recently was a promo for a show that's. Oh, this is on like Showtime or Amazon or something like that. But anyway, it's got this famous comedian. Gosh, and why am I having trouble thinking of his name right now? Oh, you know, I'll think about it after we're done, or it'll pop into my mind, you know, just on an untimely basis. But anyways, the two people in this little bit of the trailer, this little preview of the thing. The one of them says to the other, he says to the woman, he goes, you know, God is going to punish us for this. And she says back to him, she goes, well, God is not going to punish you. You're an atheist. I don't know, just in the abstract, that term. Oh, and the guy's famous, but he's just he's got his moments, I'll tell you. But
sounds like George Carlin, but
no, it's Woody Allen. Bang.
Okay.
It's Woody Allen and whoever was in that thing. I'd love to see the thing. It looks like it's hilariously funny. I'm not an atheist. I was talking with somebody about it the other day, and I said, you know, I understand the appeal and the allure of atheism.
Yeah.
Because, partially because I know that there are people out there who, you know, have been, you know, damaged by people, psychologically damaged by people who call themselves believers in a supreme being. And, you know, and then there's, you know, the intellectual conceit behind atheism. But really, it's the weakest explanation for the, you know, for the existence of everything in the world that you could possibly have from an intellectual standpoint. It just doesn't stand up. I mean, you really have to have more faith in that than you do in believing God, in my opinion.
Yeah. Always say I'm not an atheist because I don't have that much faith. So
there you go. That's exactly it. So
yeah.
Anyway, this is Mary's prayer, and then we'll just say goodnight to everybody. Good night, Al.
Good night.
Bye bye.
Dear Father, we acknowledge that you have brought this Madison's team together for your purposes. We seek to humbly serve you in all that we do. May we represent you in truth and love. We ask for your blessings upon Madison's CPC and Open Rebellion Radio, its staff, and its followers. We also ask that you turn our nation back to you and seek your mercy and continued blessings for her. May your will be done in all that we do. In Yeshua's name we pray. Amen.
Thank you.